gonna get started. This is, I think, gonna be sort of a different type of session than we've had in the past, and it's really, in, I guess, many ways, a more personal session. Jenny, who we just heard, Dr. Goldstein, and Rabbi Tavis, who we'll introduce, you know, soon, who's sort of our rabbinic scholar. Those who've been here in the past know we always have a non-medical person, just for all the non-doctors in the room. And to teach, you know, the rough sort of the weekend, but this particular case, they're both going to speak on issues of raising a special needs child. They both have special needs children, so we thought this would be sort of a fascinating talk. Dr. Goldstein will go first, then Rabbi Tavis will speak, and then we'll do, you know, questions and answers. So without further ado, bakasha.
Okay. The title of my talk is Raising Special Needs Children, How Special Children Raise Their Parents, because obviously, as with all children, we learn so much from our children, and particularly from special needs children, that you feel like they are actually raising you through the process. For those of you who are here this morning, this is a very different type of talk. I'm really sharing with you in a very personal way the story of my family and the story of my marriage. So this is not at all research-based or text-based. This isn't a developed theory. This is just family-to-family sharing our story. I'm bringing this because I'm homesick. This is the sunset from my house in the Beit Daniel, Gush Etzion, for those who have been to the area. This is what we get to look at every single night. So, regards. So for those of you who weren't here this morning, my name is Jenny Goldstein. My husband, Dani, and I made Aliyah with our four children from Brooklyn, New York to Neve Daniel, Gush Etzion, in 2007. Our oldest was 12 at the time, and he's now, as Jane mentioned earlier, Chayal. Our second son is beginning 12th grade on Sunday. Our daughter is sharpening her pencils, or was this morning. It's already Shabbos. I just wish them good Shabbos now, and they closed the phone. But this morning, she was getting her bag all packed for 8th grade. And our youngest, Yehuda, is 11 years old, heading into 5th grade in a special education school in Yerushalayim, and he is the inspiration for my talk today. I will be speaking with you about the impact of a special needs child on the family, about the internal process of acceptance for parents, about the impact of a special needs child on siblings and on family dynamic, and about strengthening a marriage in the context of raising a special needs child. 2004, the year Yehuda was born, was a very exciting time for us. Donnie's father, a brilliant professor of philosophy at SUNY Binghamton and a doting grandfather, had passed away unexpectedly in 2002, and it was such a blessing to have a beautiful, alert, smiling little boy in our arm 23 months later to carry his name. In Yehuda's seemingly charmed first months, here's a picture of him, I was a child psychiatry fellow in North Shore University Hospital. My husband was the rabbi at Kingsway Jewish Center in Flatbush, and our plans for Aliyah were crystallizing as we purchased land to build our home in Israel, a lifelong dream come true. Then, when Yehuda was about 10 months old, I realized with nagging anxiety that he was not swallowing solids. A speech therapist quickly targeted his oral muscle tone and his eating improved, but it became clear that something was still profoundly not right. Despite all the therapy that New York State early intervention provided, by the time we made Aliyah, when Yehuda was 3 years old, he was still not speaking at all. And yet still, because of how alert and engaged he was, all neurological assessments concluded that we just sit tight and wait patiently for a late bloomer to come around on his own time. In an emergency meeting in August, as we unpacked boxes, he was assigned to a nursery for autistic children, though his diagnosis remained unclear. That meeting was my first surreal moment in my journey as Yehuda's mother. Could it really be that I am on the anxious, helpless parent side of this discussion, not the knowledgeable, polished professional side? As three became four, the deficits and delays became more pronounced, and further evaluation confirmed a diagnosis of moderate mental retardation. To date, all genetic testing has been inconclusive, and so the DNA source of his impairment remains a mystery. In some ways, our story is different than other parents' stories, because Yehuda's diagnosis did not crush the breathless anticipation of the ultrasound room, nor did it shatter the miraculous ecstasy of the delivery room. The extent of his impairment unfolded more gradually over time. But in other ways, our story is similar to other parents' stories, for we too had to mourn the loss of dreams of a child's boundless future, and we too had to mourn the loss of that sense of control over our lives that we had been naively nurturing until we, like so many others, learned that in reality, all we can truly control is how we choose to handle the sudden curves in the road we never anticipated when we eagerly took the wheel and hit the humbling road of parenting. For me, nothing represented this morning more than this sitter here, beautifully inscribed and given to Yehuda after his birth by very dear and close friends, at a time when all seemed very much still in our control. Around Yehuda's first birthday, I began to have great difficulty looking at this sitter, for the inscription made me cry. Allow me to read it to you now. Dear Yehuda Aryeh, when you are but a toddler, may you hold the sitter close to your heart with love and affection, and hope one day to read its words. When you begin school and learn to read, may you use it to practice enthusiastically your reading skills and hope one day to daven from it. When you learn to daven, may you proudly utter the words which it contains and hope one day to understand their meaning. When you learn the meaning of our tefillot, may you fervently recite them from this book and hope to have the opportunity to explore the array of tefillot for so many special occasions contained therein. When you fully appreciate the massive contents of this special work, may you find the prayers you will wish to recite beseechingly in times of need and thankfully in times of joy. And we hope that all your prayers should be answered l'tov for yourself, your family, and Klal Yisrael. May you use this sitter in good health. Pretty cool friends. This was hard for me to read in those early years, because more than anything else, I worried about Yehuda being happy. And nothing represents true happiness to me more than a close relationship to God. Would Yehuda ever know what that means? With all his intellectual limitations, how would he experience the joy and comfort of a meaningful spiritual life? The sitter has evolved into a symbol of our appreciation of who Yehuda is, and I will explain to you how that transformation took place. Some of you here may already have seen this video from the Eish HaTorah website. Allow me to play it for you now. Okay, sit tight, we're gonna watch just a few minutes of the video.
Hard first baseman and into right field. Everyone starts yelling, "Shia, run to first! Shia, run to first!" Never in his life has Shia run to first. By the time the right fielder tracks the ball down, Shia is standing on first base with an excited, startled look on his face. The right fielder understands his intentions, and so he throws the ball all the way over the third baseman's head. And now everybody yells, "Shia, run to second! Shia, run to second!" Shia heads towards second base, as the runners ahead of him round the bases to score the tying runs. As Shia reaches second base, the opposing shortstop runs towards him, turns him in the direction of third base, and shouts, "Shia, run to third! Shia, round third!" All 18 boys of both teams are running behind him, screaming, "Shia, run home! Shia, run home!" Shia crosses home plate, and the 18 boys lift him on their shoulders as the hero hit a grand slam and won the game. After watching the whole event, Shia's father says, "I know that everything that God does is perfect. Yet all these years I would ask myself, Shia can't learn or even move like other children. So where's God's perfection in my son?" With tears rolling down his cheeks, Shia's father said, "Now I see Shia's greatness. When God brings a child like Shia into the world, perfection comes in the way people react to this child. Today, because of Shia, these 18 boys reached perfection." One Sunday afternoon,
Chazara. Shia's father finds an answer to his painful questions with one approach. I know many special needs parents share that same experience of solace, thinking about how much chesed their impaired child brings to the world, by presenting opportunities for others to be more selfless. I must confess, however, that this line of thinking was not a comfort for me at all. I did not feel comfortable accepting that my child's sole tafkid in life was to help others grow closer to God. It seemed to me that this defined him as just a prop in somebody else's life, an extra on somebody else's movie set. My husband and I spoke about this question together now and then, because who has time to actually talk as a couple, right? And one day, he showed me a picture of the solar system. From our literal and conceptual view as humans on Earth, the solar system seems vast, and the planets seem so very far apart from one another and so different. But from God's perspective, they are so close together. And though each is unique to God, they surely seem far more similar than they do to us. We realized that we were grappling with our question from a very myopic view of spiritual and religious potential. We, who live in the world of academic achievement and intellectual pursuits as a value, think of those with a high IQ as so far away on the spectrum from someone with an intellectual disability. But from the view of spiritual IQ, from God's perspective, that is, all of us are actually far more similar, far closer together than we appreciate. All of us are just human beings, trying to relate to God in the way we can, using the tools we have. Soon after finding meaning in this solar system idea, we had a bar mitzvah in the family, my nephew's, and this picture was captured during the dancing. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein holding the hand of Yehuda, dancing in a moment of Avodat Hashem together. I cried when I saw that picture. The nature and the content of their relationship with God is, of course, so different from our human perspective. But Rav Aaron so comfortably dancing with our impaired child to the words of David HaMelech set to music poignantly represented to us this idea of everyone doing the best they can with what they have. With our eyes open to it, we see Yehuda's relationship with God so active and alive wherever we look. I don't remember when we first started talking to Yehuda about God, but he somehow picked up from an early age that we believe in a power that watches over us and protects us. And he literally talks to God whenever the need arises. It's an open channel of authentic conversation with God that most of us only achieve at moments of desperate crisis. So that when he was dismissed at noon from school one winter day, because of an anticipated snowstorm, But he arrived home to disappointingly black pavement. He grabbed a sitter, went to the window, and started praying. Hashem, Sheleg b'vakasha. Ani rotza lasachik b'chutz im Sheleg. Hashem, snow please. I want to play outside with snow. Coincidentally, or not, those magical first flakes of a storm began appearing as he prayed. He slammed shut the sitter, matter-of-factly, and said, Yofi, shamata oti, toda. Great, you heard me, thanks. And he went to find his boots. It just, that's the way it is. One of the many gifts in our life which come along with the package deal of Yehuda is shalva. Has anybody heard of shalva? Do you know shalva? How much press does that get here? Shalva provides an after-school program for Yehuda until 6 p.m. each day. At Shalva, he receives additional hours of therapy, stimulating and exciting fun, and an abundance of love from Benot Shirut, National Service Young Women, representing some of the highest caliber teens out there. I will talk more about Shalva shortly. In this video I'm about to show you, you will see Yehuda coping with a setback in his day. A fall at Shalva led to a boo-boo. And all is caught on film by his bat Sheirut, Ora Wiener, and if you know Ben and Shifri Wiener, that name ring a bell, her daughter, who is speaking with him. His response to being injured is to immediately turn to God. I'll play the whole video through for those who understand the Hebrew, and then I'll translate afterwards, okay, in case you can't catch it. So what's happening in this video is he fell, and he was sitting on the slide after he fell, and he just started talking. Hashem, do you hear me? I'm here in Shalva. I'm not in the sky. Oof, you're too far away. Hashem, do you hear me? And then she says, talk to him. It's okay. He'll hear you even if he doesn't respond. And then he says, I need a Band-Aid. Maybe he's on the computer. That's why he's not hearing me. Shows you what he does in his spare time, right? And then he says, okay, I need to call an ambulance. And then he says, Hashem, just do magic with me and make it better. And then they went inside. She was great with the camera. She sends me pictures all day. It's wonderful. In 2010, on the last evening of summer vacation, we went back to school to a school activity at Yehuda's Gan. His beloved Gananet, 2 years running, Kochava Evan Chaim, greeted him back with a big hug. And together they decorated a new school bag for the following day, the first day of school. We went home and received a call about 10 p.m. that Kochava and her fellow passengers driving home to their yeshuv, Beit Chagai, had been shot. Can't even talk about this without crying still. Had been shot by terrorists and killed in a spray of bullets after they ambushed her on the road. Navigating explaining murder to a special needs child was a parental child challenge with no guidebook to follow. We told Yehuda that Kochava had died and that she was now sitting with Hashem, very happy to be near him, but that she missed Yehuda. Children are a resilient breed, and Yehuda is no different. After a few weeks, he didn't talk about Kochava too much, and he went off to Gan each day happily. But one day, he was rummaging through his toy chest, and he discovered a harmonica similar to the one Kochava and he used to enjoy together. He grabbed it and ran to the window and started calling out, Hashem, give me back my Kochava. I want to play with her, please. His heartfelt plea was more powerful than any prescribed words we ourselves had been mumbling for weeks. paralyzed by complex questions that encumbered our ability to express our emotions. Yehuda communicates with God far more clearly and directly than we do. Kochava and Yehuda connected over that harmonica because Yehuda is very musical. When he dances to a song on Shabbat or at a simcha, or just on his own at the piano and plays with the drums in our home, we are able to recognize with ease how beautifully his neshama is developing, way ahead of schedule, off the growth charts, with no delays at all. As I mentioned earlier, Yehuda is one of four children. Being the sibling of a special needs child is a rewarding and enriching experience at times, but often it can be very exasperating. My daughter is 2 years older than Yehuda, and she is the sibling most affected by him. We encourage her to talk about the complex feelings, and we allow the anger to be expressed in words, for we find that love flows far more easily when the challenges are recognized and discussed openly. Siblings of special needs children have to learn early on to strengthen their muscles of patience, flexibility, and the ability to see humor at times of chaos. Shalva has enhanced the life not just of Yehuda, but of my other children as well. It is part of our family rhythm. These are my children here at the Jerusalem Marathon. My boys ran to fundraise for Shalva. It just felt natural to them that they would do that. High school boys and girls and pre-army yeshiva students from nearby Yeshivat Haaretzion volunteer there at Shalva to serve as shadows for kids who need one-on-one supervision. My oldest, who's now in the army, has been a Shalva volunteer for 2 years, and my second son will be there starting this year as a volunteer just because they wanted to. The mitnadvim, the word that's used for the volunteers, speak gushingly about all they gain from their chanichim, which is the word for children campers, but for the kids there, not because of the chesed points they are amassing by caring for them, but because of all they learn from them and how much love they receive from them. We are extremely privileged to live in the Gush Etzion community, where kids who volunteer are considered the cool kids, so that my children have actually never experienced or been exposed to negative comments or hints of disparaging attitudes towards their brother by other children. In this picture, you see Yehuda with his Bat Sheirut and a volunteer. Abigail, his Bat Sheirut in this picture, this is from 2 years ago. She still visits him as often as she can, not for the mitzvah of it, but because of the genuine relationship which has developed between them. I will now turn to the impact on the marriage of the parents of the child. Of course, many special needs children are raised by single parents or by parents who are divorced. In this talk, I'm sharing personal reflection from my family's experience. I'm not speaking as a professional, and so I will save discussion about those situations of single parenting for another presentation. Of course, the adventure of parenting any child alters the relationship between a husband and wife in a profound way. But when raising a child with atypical demands, the potential for stress and drain on a marriage is far greater. What we have found is that all the ingredients needed for a successful marriage when raising typically developing children are really the same ones needed to raise a special needs child, just that the ingredients need to be multiplied for a triple or quadruple recipe of teamwork. Number one, open and direct communication. Number two, looking out for the fatigue of the other and being aware of when a break is needed. Number three, the total abolishment of any flavor of passive-aggressive hostility, asking directly for what you need, not assuming mind-reading and then being angry when it doesn't happen. Passive-aggressive hostility is something that a lot of couples struggle with, and especially in this kind of situation, you just got to be honest with each other and talk openly. Division of labor, with no preconceived notions of appropriate task assignments. Whatever needs to be done, gets done. I'll tell you a funny story just from this morning. I had a very wonderful experience this morning of being able to go to Shacharis with a minyan, which never happens for me. And so when I spoke to my husband after breakfast, I thanked him because he's working very hard at home for me to be here. And I said, Don, thank you so much. I was able to go to Shacharis with a minyan this morning. It was so nice. And he said, well, I just hope that we have a shared bank account. Division of labor. And number five, as you hear, humor. Always, always, always humor. And finally, placement of a financial and scheduling priority on time away together. A 24-hour getaway every few months is really life-saving. This requires careful budgeting, juggling work demands, arranging babysitting. Many, many technical details need to be planned. But reinvesting in the relationship for just 24 hours without children is a refueling stop on the side of the road, critical to continuing safely on this complex journey. Raising a child with developmental disabilities is an exhausting but wondrous opportunity to learn about how to appreciate spirituality, humanity, and the majestic world around us in a deeper, more enriching way. One comes to appreciate that all children are truly special needs, in that all children have the special need to be appreciated for what makes them special. And one comes to appreciate that we are all far more alike than different. In her memoir, Expecting Adam, Martha Beck writes, "If you'll cast your mind back to high school biology, you may remember that a species is defined in part by the number of chromosomes in every individual. Adam's extra chromosome makes him as dissimilar from me as a mule is from a donkey. Adam doesn't just do less than a normal child his age might. He does different things. He has different priorities, different tastes, different insights." Beck writes of the transformations her son has wrought in her own life. The immediacy and joy with which he lives his life make rapacious achievement, Harvard style, look a lot like quiet desperation. Adam has slowed me down to the point where I notice what is in front of me, its mystery and beauty, instead of thrashing my way through a maze of difficult requirements toward labels and achievements that contain no joy in themselves. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, which is still hard to say, delivered a sicha, a talk, to overseas students on July 1st, 2007, entitled On Raising Children. So, I wish to share with you a few lines from his beautiful talk, as transcribed by his Talmidim. In these words, Rav Aaron reminds us that parenting is about enjoying our children for who they are, not for who or what they become one day, and not despite who or what they will never be. And this is what Rav Aaron said. "I did not play ball with my children as a trick, as a tactic. I did not think, today I'll play basketball with him, and in a year we will learn Minchas Chinuch together. I don't think one should approach it that way. There is a joy, there is wonder, in the ability to play with one's children. It is not simply a tool, not just instrumental. It is a joy in its own right, and one of the joys which I think God fully permits us and wants us to participate in. I don't harbor any guilt about playing ball with my children, nor do I regard it as a wasted day. It is part of what being a family is all about." I imagine nobody here was at the funeral, but for those of us who were zocheh to be there, and maybe you heard transcripts of the children speaking, they all spoke about how playful their father was with them, and that he was a really get down on your knees kind of dad and play in the dirt with them, and that that's what made him a special father to them. It was really very beautiful to hear that. In closing, I wish to share with you a well-known text depicted on a piece of artwork which is hanging in our dining room. These words are those of Rabbi Nachman, transformed into a song by Naomi Shemer, which many of you probably have heard, but I'm going to read it, and I want you to think about the experience of raising a special needs child as you hear it. Dalecha shekol ro'eh ro'eh yesh lo migun miyuchad mishalo. Know that every shepherd has his own tune. Dalecha shekol esev ha'esev yesh lo shira miyuchadet mishalo. Every blade of grass has its own song. U'mishirata asabim na'aseh nigun shel ro'eh. And from the songs of the blades of grass together, the song of the shepherd is formed. Kama yafa v'na'e k'sheshom'im hashira shalahem. How beautiful it is when you hear this song. Tov ma'od lehitpalel b'neihem. How wonderful it is to pray amongst this grass. U'v'simcha la'avod et Hashem. And enjoy to serve God. U'mishirata asabim itmalei halev u'mishtokek. and from the song of these blades of grass, the heart is filled and it's yearning. And when the heart is filled with song and is yearning, El Eretz Yisrael, towards Israel, Or Gadol Azayim Shach V'Holech Mikdushata Shel Haaretz Alav U'Mishirata Asabim Na'aseni Gun Shel Halev. The light of Eretz Yisrael shines on the person, and this kedusha helps to create the song in an even more beautiful way. So for us, these words obviously typify our whole family experience, and so they're hanging over our Shabbos table every week.
Thank you very much. Well, as I mentioned, we'll take questions after Rabbi Taubes. You can read his bio in the book. And as I mentioned, we always like to have a rabbinic, non-medical person with us. But it's interesting, mitzvah. Rabbi Taubes and his wife were in Toronto a few months ago to speak at a special weekend dedicated to the notion on special kids at the Beit. We're laser dubbing. So he called me up after Shabbos and he said it was a great weekend. It was really wonderful. Maybe we should invite them to medical ethics. So I said that's a great idea. So that's really how we have the privilege of hearing Rabbi Taubes. We'll hear it many times over the weekend. He is the principal of MTA, Marsha Stern Talmudic Academy, the Yeshiva University High School for Boys. If I got that all correct. The Rosh Yeshiva and the head of schools. That's a very long title. But he also is a Rav of a shul in Tinek, Zichron Mordechai, and it's a pleasure to have him with us. And now we'll hear him tell his personal story with their own special needs child.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kelman. It is certainly a pleasure when Dr. Friedman called us and invited us to come, or asked if we were interested in coming. We immediately said yes. It's true that I'm not in the medical field. My wife happens to be in the medical field, and it was just a perfect fit, and we're thrilled to be here and to enjoyed everything so far. The only problem is that when you're speaking at one session, you can't hear the other sessions, but I guess that's why they have recordings. As was mentioned, my wife and I also are parents of a special needs child, and so many of the things that Dr. Goldstein just mentioned resonated certainly with me. It would probably resonate certainly with my wife as well. I guess as a father, the perspective is sometimes a little bit different. And what I'd like to focus on more so in my presentation, as opposed to the direct family situation, is the general question, of course, it relates, the question of educating individuals with special needs. So if you have the booklet, the pamphlet, and you'd like to follow along, the sources begin on page 68. It's not necessary to follow on the sources, but if you find that helpful, you certainly are welcome to do so. Our special needs child is also our youngest. He's almost 21. He was born in 1994. And when he was born, he's our fifth child. And obviously, we're not expecting anything out of the ordinary. There was nothing out of the ordinary that we know in terms of my wife's pregnancy or anything else. The time when he was born was a little over a year after Rabbi Yosher Ben Soloveitchik, Zichrono Lebrach, had passed away, the Rav. Rav died in 1993, and I was privileged to be a Talmud in Rav Soloveitchik's shir in YU, more or less the last 5 years or so that he was coming regularly to the yeshiva, the late 1970s, early 1980s, and my wife's father had been a prominent Talmud of the Rav's back in the 1950s, and since the time our son was born, we didn't have any male relatives that needed the naming for. And we thought it would be appropriate to name him Yosef Dov. He was, the Rav was my Rebbe, and certainly, although again, by the time I was in the shir, the Rav was not who he had been because of illness and age, but certainly my Rebbeim, Rav Lichtenstein, Chol Rach, and Baruch Chaim Rav Shechter, also primary Talmidim of his. And therefore, we thought it would be appropriate to name our son Yosef Dov, which we did. Again, it was my Rebbe, my father-in-law's Rebbe. And obviously, like any other parent, we had very high hopes. He was our youngest child, so he was spoiled at the beginning. And just at one point, maybe it was a year and a half, it was actually our oldest daughter who made a comment to my wife. I don't remember the exact context. My wife might remember better. She said, you know, Yosef has been a baby for a long time. was her way of saying that, you know, there seems to be something wrong. And we thought, we didn't really pay that much attention. We realized, you know, he's not developing the same way other children did. And sometimes you think, or at least we thought, well, it's the youngest child, you know, you pamper him more, and so on and so forth. Can't speak for anybody else, but sometimes the youngest child, the joke is, and in most homes there are thousands of pictures of the oldest child, and you know, a few less at the end. By the time you get the youngest child, maybe there are three pictures. Although today everybody has phones, so they can take pictures. I heard a comedian say once, "I have more pictures of my children than my father ever looked at me." But at least that they were having the youngest child, so we didn't pay as much attention and so on and so forth. But we realized, and then we had him diagnosed. He wasn't talking properly. We thought it was a hearing. All kinds of definitions. He was diagnosed with what's called PDD, pervasive development delay, which is not really a useful diagnosis, as we found out. It's such a broad diagnosis, and he, as it turns out, is on the autistic spectrum. And I knew next to nothing about autism. My picture of autism was a child that you can't touch, and he can't look you in the eye, doesn't make eye contact, and some of that is true with many children. But as we rapidly found out, that I don't think there's any one diagnosis that fits every single child, because there's so many differences. So I'd just like to look at some of the issues that come up for me as a father. Again, the relationship is different. My wife was thinking of writing a book, or at least an article, called My Constant Companion. Because again, a child with his disabilities is going to have a very, very different kind of life. But he is such a happy child. He's such a happy-go-lucky kid that this year he was in Eretz Yisrael for the year, and he went back to Eretz Yisrael in the summer. He travels more than I do. But I'd like to go through some of the issues relating to educating such children in general, and share some personal vignettes. But as I say, you can use the sources to follow along. The Torah tells us in the first source, in the beginning of Bereshit, Parak Aleph, Pasuk Kaf Hey, Vayir Elokim Es Adam Betzalmo, Betzalem Elokim Baro. So every human being was created Betzalem Elokim. Exactly how we define that and understand that, it's not the subject of a lengthier discussion, but in the broad sense, it means every human being is created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're all different, but nevertheless, every person, every human being, including non-Jews, again, that's not for right now, but everybody has a Tzelem Elokim. And it doesn't matter what your intellectual ability is, what your emotional level is, but every human being has a Tzelem Elokim. And the Gemara tells us in the second source in Sanhedrin, this is on page 68 in the book, so you want to follow inside. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, says, L'fichach nivra adam yechidi, l'hagid v'loso shakadosh baruch hu. This teaches us the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because usually when a person, let's say you mint a coin, so you set up the stamp, and then you put the metal in, and every single coin looks exactly the same, right? Because you have a print that comes out. Adam Tovea Kama Met Be'ez Becho Samachad. You'll have one print, so to speak, and dozens or hundreds or thousands, whatever many you print, come out looking exactly the same. But a Kulan Domin Zelazem. However, Melech Machem Lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tova Kol Adam Becho Samachad Adam Rishon. Every person was stamped, so to speak, with the same stamp of Adam Rishon. Ve'ein Echad Mehem Domin Lachaber. Not one that looks like the other. Last night in the presentation, what did he say, 1 in 30 million or something was in terms of the DNA that was mentioned at the session last night. So that's the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the same time, these differences are not only physical, but the Medrash tells us in the third source, the Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Pinchas Siman Yud says, Kesheim shein partzuf oseim shoven zelazeh kach ein daitam shoven zelazeh. It's not just their physical appearance, but it's their mental capacity, it's their knowledge, it's their way of thinking. Everything is different. Again, with or without DNA. I mean, DNA is the scientific explanation, but everything is different. It's not just, we say, just like two people don't look alike, they don't think exactly the same way, they don't react exactly the same way, they don't process information the exact same way, and people are different. And the Gemara says, every person has his own way of thinking, and therefore, that comes up in the Parshas Pinchas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu rather, asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you appoint my successor, that was to be Yehoshua, when you appoint my successor, please, make sure you appoint a leader who can tolerate all the different people, who can relate to the different people. That's a very important point. It's an important point for parents who have children, all the children are different, whether they're special needs or not. And somebody who's working in the school system or in any system, you have people that are different. You want to be an effective leader. That's what this Medrash is telling us, that Moshe asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if you want to have an effective leader, it has to be a leader that can relate to all kinds of different people. And people think differently regardless of whether they have special needs or not special needs. I'm fond of telling over a story that happened with one of my other children, my second daughter. She also thinks she's an artist. You know, she has a different way of thinking also than some other children. Every child is different. And the story I like to tell over is that one time when she was a little girl, so one of the younger brothers went into our cabinet. He took out the silver. You know, you have the wooden box where you keep all your silverware. So he was a wild kid, so he dumped the silverware all over the floor. Okay, that happens. So my wife asked her sister, who's a couple years older, could you put away the silverware? Okay, so she listened, she did it. And on Friday, when my wife went to take out the silverware, she saw, you know, you have in those boxes, you have the slots. There's one slot for the large forks, there's another slot for the small forks, another slot for the large spoon, another slot for the small spoons, and so on. That's how everybody puts it away. She didn't put it away that way. She put in each slot a large fork, a small fork, a knife, a large spoon, a small spoon. In other words, each slot had a setting. Now, that's a different way of thinking. Is that wrong? I don't know. It's pretty logical, actually, because you have to set the table. You have a slot right there. Just because we all did it the other way, most of us here, including myself, would have absolutely done it the other way. She didn't know that that's what she thought was the most logical way. Is that wrong? I don't think it's a wrong way. It's just a different way of thinking. It's not necessarily wrong. I also like to tell over that happened with a cousin of mine that she was taking some sort of an IQ test or some type of aptitude test when she was a little girl. And they showed her a picture, you know, a drawing of somebody without a leg. And the doctor asked, what's missing? So she answered, crutches. Is that a wrong answer? That's not the wrong answer. That's a good answer, too. Right? So I'm just trying to point out that people, not everybody thinks, it's not everybody processes, and everyone can come to the same conclusions. And it's hard to say that someone is wrong. And sometimes, of course, with tests, you know, with children, so they think, you don't know what they're thinking. A friend of mine told me a story that when he was a little, his mother was told me that when he was a little boy, so he went also for some type of a test, and the person giving the test had some kind of silly putty or something. And so he asked the boy, when do I have more silly putty in my hand? When I'm holding it like this, it was a ball, or when I stretch it all out like this, when do I have more? So he answered, oh, when you stretch it out. Okay, that's the wrong answer, it's the same amount. But the boy on the way home said to the mother, you know, that guy thought that just because he stretched out the silly putty, that means he had more. So that's what I told him, because that's what he thought, but he's wrong. So you never know exactly what people are thinking. And I also like to tell over a story that I had myself. You know, when I was entering the kindergarten, so starting yeshiva day school, I guess my mother, Shalom, told me that I'm going to yeshiva, and I'm going to learn, and whatever it is. So she takes me also for whatever evaluation. And the person is testing me, shows me pictures of things, and he shows me a picture of a house, and he says, what's this? And I said, I don't know. And he takes me another picture, shows a ball, what's this? I don't know. Shows it. And my mother is, she would say, what's the matter with him? He knows what these things are. He showed me several pictures, and each one I said, I don't know, four or five. And then he showed me a chair, and I said, kisei. I thought he was asking me in Hebrew what these things were. I knew in English what they were, but they told me I'm going to yeshiva. I thought I had to know in Hebrew. So I didn't learn too much Hebrew yet, so I didn't know what they were. One word I happened to know. So luckily, my mother always told her, luckily the person who was testing me was a firm person, so he realized. But it would have been somebody else, the kids babbling, he said, wouldn't know what it meant. It would have, I don't know what would have happened to me. But Lamaisa, again, it just shows you never understand. It's the same thing is true, and especially when dealing with special needs children, sometimes they process things so differently you don't realize. And I have to say, and I don't know if Dr. Goldstein related to this or not, but sometimes you lose your patience with the child or you don't realize that they didn't understand what you wanted. So we were in Eretz Yisrael a couple of summers ago. So with our son Yosef Dov, we a lot of times ask him, because sometimes his mind wanders, we want to keep him focused on what we're doing. What are we doing? You know, we're asking questions to keep him focused. So we were hiking up somewhere, you know, in the north of Eretz Yisrael, near Dan, and Banyas, that area. We were hiking, they have the water tubing and stuff, they have hikes through the streams over there. So we were with one other son, so my wife and I, and the son was closest in age to him, a little bit older, and Yosef, so we're walking through the woods over there, the hike, and we had with us, as you have to have an Eretz Yisrael here too, in the summertime, you have to have bottled water with you to drink, so we have water. So my wife wanted a drink, so she said to turn to Yosef, and Yosef had been carrying the water, so she said, Yosef, where's the water? So he points to where the stream is. And I turned around and said, you threw the bottle in the water. Why'd you throw it in the water? I thought he's pointing. I started yelling, what'd you throw it in the water for? We need that water. Then a few paces later, my other son comes. He's holding the water. So I realized, well, we said, where's the water? He thought, it's another one of these times where they're trying to keep me focused. So where's the water? He points to the stream. That he didn't mean. I interpreted it to mean he threw the bottle into the water. I completely misread it. And of course, the question becomes, you know, as an educator, as a teacher, those people who are in the education field or who have children, there's a wonderful film It was produced quite a number of years ago. It's, I don't know if it's outdated. It could probably be up to. It's called Fat City. I don't know if anyone ever saw it. I've seen it. It's tremendous. Basically, what happens in this film is the person running the seminar has a room like this full of people who are educators, and he basically makes you, the listener, into a disabled person. The way he presents it, you don't hear it. It's really very fast. It's hard for me to describe it. It's really worth, I suppose you can search for it online. But I still remember one thing which was just struck me as fascinating. You know, he said, sometimes kids have to process questions. So he'll say, you have the following situation. And it struck me as a Rebbe and as a teacher. You know, sometimes a teacher will ask the question, okay, who was the first president of the United States? And the Canadians know that too, right? So who was the first president of the United States? So instantly everybody raises their hand. Now, one little kid has to process the question. So he knows the answer, but he has to process it. But meanwhile, everyone else's hands shoot up, so the teacher calls, okay, yeah. Well, Billy, what's the answer? So he says, George Washington. Good. Now the teacher says, okay, and who's the president of the United States today? This other kid didn't even hear that question because he was still processing the first question, which he now processed, and he raises his hand, and the teacher calls on him, and he says, George Washington. And everybody laughs. And the teacher says, you're trying to make a joke out of my class, get out. This poor child doesn't know what he did wrong. It's the right answer, and everybody laughed at him, he got thrown out of the class. It's just a fact, and there were kahena, many such examples of situations where we have to recognize that comes back to the Medrash Tanhuma, that we have to know that, people think differently and process differently, and that's certainly true when you have a special needs child. You have to learn how to talk to him and how he processes things, keep him focused, and so on. Of course, this is the Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I printed in the fourth source, the famous Gemara in Tainis, the Chochmah Aleph, going over to Chochmah Beis. I'll say it outside to save a few minutes, but the Gemara tells a story about one of the Tanaim of Elizabeth Rebbe, who was traveling home from Yeshiva, and was in a great mood because he just learned a lot of Torah, and he came upon a person who was exceedingly ugly. It says, Nizdamin lo Adam Echad Shehav Mechur B'Yosir. His physical appearance was just repulsive. He found it disgusting, and to the point that he couldn't even speak to this person. And the person greeted him and said hello, and he couldn't even respond. And he said, this rabbi said in a moment of weakness, a human being, said to him, Shema kol b'nei yircha mechoram kamosa, all the people live in your town as ugly as you are? To which he responded, I don't know. So leich ve'emar le'uman sha'asa ani kam mechor kli zesh sha'asisa. Go tell he who fashioned me how ugly his handiwork is. Go tell God you didn't do a good job, right? Then the Kadosh Baruch Hu created. And then the Gemara goes on to say that they came to the town and people came out to greet this Rav and so on. And this man said, if that's a Rav, who wants any part? Hey, lady, there's Mochon, whatever. It's an interesting story. I'm going to read it. But again, this is the way Kadosh Baruch Hu created. Kadosh Baruch Hu created people differently. You don't like something about it? Go complain to him that this person is not intelligent as we think he should be, or is not as attractive as we think he should be. This is the Ratzon of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kam v'chur adam zeh. Now, we speak very frequently in education, both of children and of our own children and of students, of the concept of chinuch. So one of the famous psukim, of course, in source number 5 is the pasuk of Mishlei Parakov Beis pasuk, chanoch lanar al pidarko gam ki yadzki lo yosur meno. The famous chanoch, educate every child in accordance with his way, because when he gets older, he won't veer from it. So, here went to YU, we'll call it my father, shalom be well, was an English professor at YU for many years. So this would be called a pronoun where the antecedent of the pronoun is not clear. What does it mean, chanoch lanar pidarko, gam ki yazkin lo yosur mimeno? When he gets older, he won't veer away from it. What's the it that he won't veer away from? So most people assume, chanoch, the chinuch, that teach him now, because that way, when he gets older, he won't veer away from what's the it, that which you taught him. However, some mepharshim say no. Chanoch lanar pidarko. The word mimena, the it modifies darko, meaning his way. Because even when he gets old, he's still going to have the same way. Teach him in accordance with the way he thinks. Because even when he gets old, he's still going to think that way. How many of us have leaving out my disabled, my child with special needs? Sometimes you see the children are adults. They were like that as a kid. Right? That's exactly, they had the same personality and the same reaction to things when they were little kids. What am I saying? All my children. We can already see it now. We look back. Right? He behaved the same way when he was 4 years old. He had the same reaction. Right? So chinuch has to be in accordance with the way the child is going to grow up, because that's going to be his tendency. That's the way he's going to be. So chinuch has to match that which this child is going to be for his whole life. What is whole life? What is chinuch anyway? We translate chinuch as education, as training. The Torah tells us in Parashat Lech Lecha, an interesting pasuk, source number six, Parashat Parag Yudal, pasuk Yudal. Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv ayark es chanichav. This is the story when Lot got kidnapped. So it says Avram rallied as chanichav. He rallied a bunch of people. It says 318 men. Some say it was Elias, whatever it was. 318 people ayark es chanichav. So Rashi tells us in source number seven, important Rashi. It's one they call in the yeshiva, it's a dikduk Rashi. So people always pay attention, but it's an important Rashi. What does chinuch mean? Perek yadal, pasuk yadal. It's the first form of this word in the Torah. Chanachovsky is Eliezer, fine, but he says, "V'hu loshon haschalas knisas ha'adam okli l'umnus shu'asit lamabba." You know what chinuch is? Chinuch is introducing or initiating somebody or a vessel, as it comes with the Mishkan and so on, into that, the way it's going to be used, into what it's going to be. That's what chinuch is. Right, haknisas haadam leumnus huasid lamabo, training a person or inculcating or initiating a person into that which he or she is going to be. That's what chinuch really means in its purest sense. And what that means is you've got to figure out with every child, including a special needs child, what is it that this child is capable of, and train him or her and educate him or her accordingly. The Gemara says in Shabbos, and Avkuf Nun Vav and Aleph, an interesting Gemara. The Gemara there talks about people being born under certain constellations and stars. I don't go into now what that means in terms of, you know, science and everything else, with respect to all the science-based people here. But what does that mean? But the Gemara assumes that if a person is born, at least that Gemara, Shabbos Kuf Nun Vav, assumes that if a person is born under certain stars, he'll have certain tendencies. Okay, whatever. Again, I'm not interested now in the scientific end of it. The Gemara says, Haiman Dibimadim. Someone who's born under the star or the influence of Mars. Mars is Ma'adim Adam, called in English also the red planet, right? Someone who's born under Mars, so the red represents blood, he's going to be Gevar Ashidom, he's going to be someone who spills blood. Now again, leaving out the science, there's some idea that a person who's born is going to have this tendency to spill blood, says the Gemara. So Amar Ashi, Iumno Igamri Tapamal. So there are things that the person can do with that tendency to spill blood. Doesn't have to be a murderer, right? A Moel also spills blood. Right, that's the word. Let him become a moil. Let him become a butcher. Okay, let him become a doctor. Also, they open up somebody and operate, and so also blood. In other words, what the Gemara is telling us, what I understand it, is you can figure out what can the person do. Let's say he or she has tendencies X, Y, and Z, but you can channel those tendencies in a certain direction, and the person can become an extraordinarily productive member of society. We have, as mentioned before, I have a small shul in Teaneck, New Jersey. It's not one of the, a lot of famous shuls in Teaneck. My shul is one of the less famous shuls, a small shul. But in any event, we have a young man in the shul. Actually, he's a brilliant person. He just actually got a PhD in mathematics. But in other areas, he has whatever disability is not important. But he is in charge of giving out. We have it in our shul. We read the Haftarah as well from a klaf. The Haftarah, like the Torah, is written from the parchment. Now, we don't read it out of the Chumash. So this person, this is an area of his interest. So he either reads it himself, or he's in charge of getting the people to read the Haftarah. We didn't give it to him because it's a chesed project. We feel bad for the guy. We did it because he's good at it. And he found an area that he can be comfortable in the community. We have another young man in his early 20s who's Down syndrome, who is the Gabbai Sheni in the shul. He gives out the aliyahs very often. He gives out to the kids who's going to do on his. He's in charge of the shalosh shudas. Again, we didn't give this over to him because, you know, we feel bad. Let's see. It's because he's competent. He's very good at doing this kind of. Matter of fact, he was away in camp every single week. The other gabbai told me every single week he would send an email from camp reminding the other gabbai he's not going to be there. Make sure you take care of X, Y, and Z. And he reminded the other fellow, make sure the shalosh shudas is set up. His father likes to kid him and say, you know, when you're away, we never have shalosh shudas in the shul. You know, but Lamaisa, he takes his job very, very seriously again. And the question, of course, is always, why not? When we were thinking in terms of our son Yosef, about his bar mitzvah, I guess you'll come to that, there's Hashem, soon Dr. Goldsmith, when we were thinking about Yosef's bar mitzvah, figure out what to do. So he was very clear what he wanted for his bar mitzvah. After he's got two older brothers, he remembered exactly, he has an excellent memory, as some of those young people do, and he remembered exactly what we did for his brother's bar mitzvah, and he wanted the same thing. Now, he's not capable of laying in the whole sedra, but he wanted to make sure the whole, what we had was the whole family ate in our home on Friday, an extended family all ate in the home Friday night, then we had a kiddush and shul Shabbos, we had something Motzei Shabbos. He wanted the exact same thing. And at first, my wife and I talked, I remember him saying, well, Yosef, maybe we won't do that. Why not? And my wife and I looked at him. Yeah, Taka, why not? Why not? When he finished the high school that he was in, we have a local program, one of the yeshivas that, you know, that has a special program. It's called Sinai in New Jersey. I'm sure they have other places. They have Dani and other programs in Toronto and so on. So he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael after high school, like all his siblings did. So again, you know, we'll have to see us. I'm not sure. Why not? Take, why not? There was a program in Gush Etzion Yeshiva, the Arkenim, where he just was. And Yachad runs programs in Shabbatons. He sees whatever. Why not? Taka wants the same thing everybody else. So that's always the issue, and he always asks, why not? And, you know, that's what we do. In terms of halachic issues, I just printed a few of the things. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in source number 9. Igros Moshe Yordechel Beis Simon Zayin. He says that even people who might be technically exempt, and this is not the time for a whole shiur, there's a lot of literature about how we assess people in terms of mitzvahs, but very generally, even people, from Torah, even if they might be potter, exempt from certain mitzvahs because of certain disabilities, nevertheless, HaTorah Kula Nitnu L'Chulam. The Torah was given to all the Jewish people. It wasn't only if you have this IQ or that level of understanding and so on, the Torah was given to everybody. Afla Eilu Shepturah in whom I say mitzvah, even a person does a mitzvah, might be potter, it's still a mitzvah. Ratzon Hashem Yisbarach Hu Kishiyasu. It is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do that, whatever he can do. In other words, these children are also part of the bris, and they have Kedushas Yisrael, and everything else, like anybody else. And like I say children, they're adults too, right? They're part of the bris of Klal Yisrael, they're part of Kedushas Yisrael, and whatever they're able to do, this is a fulfillment of the Ratz on our Kaddish Baruch Hu. And so, when the Gemara tells us in Kiddush, in Source number 10, there are certain obligations that a parent has to a child. For example, Av Chai B'no L'mulo, you have to give him a bris mila, if it's a firstborn, Pidyon HaBen, Ulalamdo Torah, and teach him Torah, and Lasio Isha of Pad, to marry him off, Ulalamdo Umnus, and teach him a trade. That applies to everybody. You have to figure out what is it that this child can do in terms of learning Torah. What is it this young man or young woman, when they get older, they'll be able to do in terms of having a trade. But you're not exempt from the obligation. And the Gemara says, the Gemara in Kiddush and Chavtez, the Gemara in Sukkah in Source 11, and Mem Beis and Aleph says, you have to figure out, when a child is old enough to know how to shake the lulav, then you have to, coming up now shortly to Sukkah, so you have to buy him a lulav, right? Lizate, if he knows how to put on tzitzis, chayv and tzitzis, lishmor tefillin, he can wear tefillin properly, chayv l'kachol tefillin. We were very nervous with our son Yosef in terms of tefillin, because certain autistic children have a lot of sensory issues, as some of you may know, and you know he also didn't like certain types of shirts and so on. So I was very, very nervous. I talked with the baby and so on, what's to do with tefillin? And I thought maybe he finds it itchy or whatever it may be. Baruch Hashem, I never missed a day of time. I understood, again, probably because he sees me and he sees his brothers, and that's, he comes to shul. Everyone else puts on tefillin too. No issue whatsoever. No issue whatsoever. So what sense would it have made for me to have made the decision without even trying, right? Well, I think you might, try it out, right? He was old enough, so you do it. With tefillin, with all the mitzvahs that are mentioned over here, and if he's old enough to duchen and so on. Now, the discussion is, what is that level? Is it a din d'oraisa chinuch? Is it a din d'rabbanan? It's part of Talmud Torah. You know, there are all kinds of different technical details. But again, I stress, this applies to every child going back to that pasuk chinuch and arpi taka, whatever age. And there's no set age. When the pasuk can discuss, with this Gemara, you have to buy them at what age? 5, 6? I mean, today, you know, the people, I like to joke, in Europe, you never had a little bit of at all, right? I think today, whether in Teaneck or in New York or in Toronto, wherever else, you know, the average 8-year-old has a better essay than the Vilna Gaon ever saw. I would suspect that's a possibility. Right? Because today you have, you know, okay, Baruch Hashem, so we have that today. But, you know, it's, of course, now he's over, even he was in Bar Mitzvah. All the other children have a little bit of essay, so he also is going to walk around with some paper mache thing that he made in school. So I have to buy him a little bit of essay. You have to get the children the most mechudadik esrik, you know, back to whatever that movie is called, Ushpizin, you have to get him $1,000 esrik. I don't think so. But something, says, sure, whatever, he's old enough to relate, then he should certainly perform that mitzvah. Rav Moshe finds it in a different shuvah, Ebenezer Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Sam Avdalan, so it's number 12. Even talks about somebody that Pesi also has limited intelligence, and there are differences in halacha, again, which is not for today's talk, but he says, Im ach masbirolo v'sobe yochol lachlot. He's talking about chalitza, which is a higher level. Chalitza means, Rachmana Latzah, when you have a couple that's married and then suddenly the husband dies and they never had any children. So before the wife can remarry, she has to undergo a process called Chalitza with the brother of the deceased. So you have to have a certain level of understanding, but Moshe finds the right to the tshuva, even if he's a Pesi, even if he's not Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. The Pesi means somebody who's again, he's on some sort of severely intellectually impaired. But he says, if you can explain to him what it is, and he performs the chalitzas also. If you can ask him questions, you can answer. So you have to look at each case. Sometimes the person can answer. It does show exact understanding of what it is. In the Shulchan Aruch, in Source 13, Arachayim Simon Kuf Tzadites, it was a Birchas Hamazon Sif Yud. This was a question we had also when our son Yosef became Bar Mitzvah. And now, well, we already had a mezuzah. One of the boys already had a house. So can I count him towards a mezuzah in the house? So that was a practical question that we had. I'm sure other people had also. Can you count such a child to be one of the members of the mezuzah? So he says, even a cheresh and a shota, people again who have various impairments, in mechavnim u'mevin, if they more or less understand what's going on, we have to bench a mitzvah lezimah. They can count for a mezuzah. And the bir halach and the mishnah berurah in the nay. Source number 14, the Masahu Keshota Rekotten. The Mishnah Berurah adds that the same who Adin Latrila for davening also. This young man that I mentioned before in our shul is a Down syndrome young man, again, his early to mid 20s, who's a guy. Sometimes he's the 10th, you know, with him, we have 10. You know, so people sometimes come late to shul, at least to either. So sometimes you barely have 10. And he's one of the 10s. Can I start the davening? Yes. Yeah, he understands very well. He probably davens better than many other people in the shul. Right, myself included. He knows what's going on. He knows the davening. You know, I'm not going to put him up to be the bonus of Rosh Hashanah, but he's able to daven and say brachas. And so we count him towards him. That's what it says in the Bir Halacha. The next tshuva is also very important in source number 15, because today we've obviously made major strides in terms of educating people. You know, today there's all kinds of schools and programs, and people have all kinds of physical or, you know, emotional or mental disabilities that they can be reached, and they can be taught, and they can be educated in a way that wasn't possible 100 years ago. There's a tshuva that I printed again in source number 15 from the, it's page 70, from the Shevet Sofer. Shevet Sofer is the son of the Chsam Sofer. So he writes in his tshuva, Chilek Ebenezer Simon Chof Aleph, he says, if they can understand even the difficulty, they create so sov or remedial sometimes hand, what do you call it, the sign language and hand signals and other kinds of things, and they can understand, then bevadai mechuya b'mitzvahs kishar yisrael, then they're chayav b'mitzvah like everybody else. Even though they can't talk, they can't understand normal, but you can explain another way to communicate and explain things, then they're chayav b'mitzvahs like everybody else. That's how the Shevet Sofer, and he tells them, ma'isa shohaya. He says, shamati, to four lines before the bottom, shamati kama pa'amim, I heard a number of times from my father, that he actually went to a place in Vienna. Apparently it was in Vienna, and the Rashash talks about this also, there was a school for the deaf. It was one of the leading institutions at that time. We're talking about the mid-1800s. And at that time, if you were deaf, so you couldn't be educated either, really. The Gemara talks about, the Mishnayos and the Gemara talk about a cheresh, he's deaf or a deaf mute. It's assumed he couldn't be educated because they had no means of communicating. But and therefore they're potter from mitzvahs. So the beginning of chagig and other mishnayos and trumas. So they're exempt from mitzvahs because they can't be educated. But the Shevet Sofer reports that his father, when he went to the school in Vienna, to this school for the deaf in Vienna, and he saw what they were able to accomplish there, he said right away, "We have to now go buy tefillin for all the Jewish men that are here. They're obligated mitzvahs like everybody. They look what they can understand." So that's certainly true today that we have more advanced means of reaching children. Shlomo Zalman Arbach in source number 16 in the Michel Shomachai Kalaf Simon Lama Dala Shuva written to Rav Scheinberg. Says he is Shlita, but anyway, that's in source number 16. He says, Nira the Chol Shu Maven Yeshul Das Kamo Putos. If he has knowledge, even though it's knowledge, he's an adult or she's an adult, but he or she has the knowledge like a little child. But Yodea Shakarish Baruch Nasan La Torah. He understands, or she understands, that the Kodesh Baruch gives the Torah. V'anachnu mekayim mitzvos, we have to keep the mitzvos. Shapir choshev kibardas l'inyan kiyum mitzvos. They're considered sufficiently knowledgeable to be obligated in mitzvos. And then v'agiyah l'gil yugimul shanari choshev gedodol. And when they reach the age of bar mitzvah, or bas mitzvah, case of a girl, they're obligated in mitzvah like everybody else. And he says, if the person is deaf, he can't hear. Aval yochol adabir isfas alagim. That's sign language, right? They can communicate by sign language or various, or they can lip read, to know a source, you know, can read lips and so on. These things are able to communicate. He quotes, Shlomo Zalman quotes some two lines on the bottom, Mechutoni are going to be a Shlomo Yashiv Shlita. He quotes some of the Yashiv, and we agree that Dino Kipikeach and so on. question whether he can't speak. Can he make a bracha? Different story, because he can't speak. He can't say the bracha. We don't say that somebody who's not able to speak just through sign language can mutter some of the bracha. But other than that, the person's obligated in mitzvah. Similarly, or Tzitz Eliezer, we've heard already a number of times over the course of this weekend already, I'm sure many more times, a very important authority in terms of medical halacha, but Eliezer of Waldenburg, that it was a dying in Yerushalayim, and the posek at that time for Shari Tzedek Hospital, Chelek Yudalit, Simon Samach Tes, Nilmar Bikola Omar Dafil Hapsoim Bioser, even though those who are most impaired, okay, he doesn't think it's, they're puzzled for edus in a court case, because they don't understand everything, and of course that's going to be vary from person to person too. Our son Yosef is not capable of abstract thinking, so he can report, but you know, he's not going to remember the story exactly. He's going to remember one side of it and so on. So when it comes to a case in a Besdin of testimony, so that's a different story. That's a Rambam talks about, of course, Eidos and the Poskim talk about. So to go testify in a court when there are nuances and you know, issues that are very important to the details of the case, that somebody who's of limited intellectual ability, so it might be puzzled, Eidos and so on and so forth. But Shaper Hema B'nei Mitzvahs. And he says, if to make a bracha, so on, if a person has a seichel, even of a seven-year-old, the person can be included. So those are just a few tshuvas on the issue. Again, as there are many, and I just want to give you a flavor. But those are a few tshuvas from poskim, both earlier and contemporary poskim, in terms of halachic obligations that children have. And of course, as I said before, there's no one diagnosis. It's going to vary from person to person. I just want to share. Towards the end, an interesting comment that Gemara has in Menachos, Daf Chof Tes Amud Aleph. Gemara tells a story that, you know, the Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, Tana D'Amar B'Shmuel, Shlosha Dvarim Hayu Kashin L'Moshe. There were a number of things which Moshe Rabbeinu himself didn't understand when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the Torah. Ad Shehera Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'etzpa'u. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a point and show Moshe what are the Elohim Menorah Rosh Chodesh U'Shvatzim. The Menorah, in the Mishkan, the Torah, Menorah, the Siv, the Zeh, Maisa, HaMenorah. Moshe Rabbeinu Chazal tell us had difficulty understanding how to fashion the Menorah of the Mishkan. The Torah gives you the details in Parshas Truma, but Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand until finally HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to show him, what do you call it, audiovisual aids. He had to show him a flashcard or something, something with a Menorah on it, so he was able to understand it. Zeh, because he used the word Zeh. We have a tradition that whenever it says in the word in Torah, Zeh, or Zos, so that means there was a demonstrative demonstration, a demonstrative presentation. So some people have the practice, the question with the argument, some people have the practice by Hagba. They lift up the Torah, say, V'zos HaTorah, some people point, you know, we point with the finger or with the talus string, or V'zos HaTorah. All right, a minute, huh? And some people have that practice. Whenever we have Zeh, it's about Menorah, it says, V'zeh Maisa HaMenorah. Same thing by Rosh Chodesh, you didn't understand. At what point is the new moon considered to be sufficiently visible, now we can declare Rosh Chodesh. It says also, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Levana, the moon, an exact, you know, angle that it has to be, or the exact amount of light that it has to be for Rosh Chodesh. And also Shratzim, and some people say Shchita, whatever, different things. What is the Torah telling us this for? So I once heard of Aaron Kahn Shchita, was the Rebbe Olson in YU, say, you want to know something? Moshe Rabbeinu, to be an effective teacher, to come back to that point, to be an effective leader, had to know that there are going to be people who don't understand everything. So therefore, Moshe himself was unable to understand. He needed extra help. He needed extra assistance understanding. Now, he'll be a better teacher, and a better rav, and a better mani. Because he himself, now he'll come across a person who doesn't understand. Yeah, well, what do you mean you understand? I explained it 10 times. He himself didn't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu, to be a more successful Rebbe, to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu means our Rav, our Manning of all of Klai Yisrael, not just selected people. Moshe Rabbeinu is not just the Rosh Kol of Mitzuyonim. Moshe Rabbeinu is the Rebbe of all of Klai Yisrael. In order to be able to affect all of Klai Yisrael, he had to himself undergo the having been in the situation where, you know what, I also had trouble understanding something. And now we can relate to people who don't understand. And I think that's an important lesson for us, again, as Rebbeim has teach, and those of us who have children, we also don't understand everything. And it reminds us that sometimes we have to be a little bit more patient. The last source that I printed is the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Nun Dalar Beis. The Gemara has, there was a certain Rabbi Preda who had a student who I guess wasn't the swiftest in terms of his intellectual ability. He says, Praying to have a Talmud, so it's 20 to have a talent. Arba Meir Zimni Begomar. I had to teach him whatever the sugi was 400 times before he understood it. That's a patient teacher. 400 times. Yeah. And then the Gemara says, Yom Achad, one day, the Praying had to leave and so on. So he taught him the 400 times. He taught it quickly. He taught it quickly. And the guy said, I didn't get it. Why don't you get it? I explained to you. So he said, because I knew you had to leave, and I was afraid each time he's going to leave. Now he's going to leave. I'm not going to get. So he couldn't concentrate. The Gemara says, so he taught it another 400 times. And then the Gemara said, then he got a great reward. That's a Rebbe who understands. I made it 400. But that's a Rebbe who understands that sometimes you have to have patience. And certainly if there's anything you have to have with children who have special needs, you have to have patience. They're not going to grasp things the same way. They're not going to understand the same way. A teacher has to have patience. You know, I don't know if it's because I have a special needs job, but certainly I'm familiar with Shalva's work, and the wonderful organization in the United States also, Yachad, and the program in Toronto that I saw when I was there. Just, you know, you're blown away by how far we've come today and how much there is for these children. You have people who are devoted, who are patient, and who are able to work. I'm not saying I'd be able to do it, you know, as a teacher, but certainly it gives you pause that this Reb Prater, who I presume could have enhanced his own learning during that time when he was spending 400 times reviewing. He might have been able to finish a daf yomi faster on his own had he not spent the time that he... That's what a Rebbe in the Talmud means. He spent that time. Bottom line is, to wrap up, you look back in Tanakh, there are a lot of people who had disabilities. I would like to point out, right? I mean, Sarah couldn't have children right away, and Rivka couldn't have children right away, and Rachel couldn't have children right away, and Yitzchak was vision impaired, and Yaakov walked with a limp, Moshe Rabbeinu had a stutter, right? To think about it for a moment, you know, there are quite a number of our heroes who had certain disabilities and were able to overcome them. I mentioned the Yosef's Bar Mitzvah that happened to be Parshas Shmos. So in Parshas Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu is hesitant, to say the least, to accept the mission presented by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go and redeem the Jewish people. And one of the things he says is, I'm not a good speaker. Go before the Pharaoh. You got to find an orator, someone who's a persuasive speaker, you know, who's on the debate team or something. Get up and present. I'm not the right guy. And of course, Baruch Hu says, me, some Pella, other. What do you mean? Who gave man the right to speak? Who makes somebody mute and who makes somebody able to talk and so on and so forth? And so, I pointed out, because Baruch Hu never says, don't worry, I'm going to cure you. He doesn't say that. He says, basically, you can look at it, and some say, full disclosure, some say that's what it means. Baruch, don't worry, I'll see that you are able to speak. But it doesn't say that in the words of the Pesukim. Kadosh Baruch Hu never says, and of course, again, I don't know if Dr. Goldstein went through it, but I know my wife and I did. You know, we thought, you know, with lots of love and lots of attention, we're going to cure him. He's going to beat this, right? At least initially, that's what you think. I mean, intellectually, you know it's not true, but you hope with all the intervention, and as I said before, all the intervention, all the therapy helps, but at the end of the day, we're back to Hanoch, Hanoch, Pidarko, that derech remains no matter what. Okay, we can do lots of improvements, but at the end of the day, the child, and he's going to become an adult, or she's going to become an adult, is going to have this disability, right? So you know, and there's no way out of that. Kadosh Baruch Hu did not say he's curing Moshe. He's saying, I know you have this problem, and I'm telling you, you can do this job anyway. I'll give you assistance, Aaron will come, he'll do some of the talking, whatever it is. Because Baruch Hu doesn't say, don't worry, I'll cure you. In other words, you're gonna do it because I say you can do it. And I think that going back to what Yosef always said to us with his bar mitzvah, with going to Eretz Yisrael, and everything else was, why not? Well, yeah, why not? He can do it. We let him do it. Now, I mean, we're grappling with this right now, even as we speak, today. You know, he came back from Eretz Yisrael, so he's been made very clear, now he wants to go to YU. After all, both his brothers went there, you know, so that's of course where he wants to go. And he's telling, my wife mentioned yesterday, we were driving here, that our three-year-old granddaughter, who was very fond of her Uncle Yosef, has told my wife, you know, Uncle Yosef's going to college. I mean, he's telling his three-year-old niece he's going to college. I mean, he's convinced he's going to college. I mean, there's no question about it. Well, we're working on something. Whatever will work out, as a chef. My point of the matter is that you can always ask the question of why not. Everybody can fit in. We were very moved when he finished the program of the beautiful film that was shot, I think it was originally a story from Rabbi Krohn, was it not? Yeah, I think that the story with the baseball. When we didn't have that with Yosef, but when he attended this program called Sana, which meets in one of the local yeshiva high schools where we live in Teaneck, and again, they had a graduation with his class, So the few kids who were in his program, we had a graduation in the morning, which was very sweet, and he had a roll, and he said something, and this and that, you know, it was very good. And the evening was going to be the whole graduation for the whole high school and the typical graduations, you know, in one of the halls, some auditorium. And we had first thought, again, there's no point for him to go. He's going to sit there, there's speeches, and, you know, we've all been to graduations there. They're best tolerable, I suppose. Right? I'm the one who runs the graduation right here. I still say that, right? But okay, you want to go and get the picture of your kid and so on and so forth. But there's speeches, there's it. So we didn't think he's going to want to sit through it in so much heat again. Why not? Of course he wants to go. And so he sat there the whole time throughout the whole ceremony. And they called out his name when they read down the list. And he goes up and he gets his handshake or whatever it is. And the boys in the yeshiva, when he went up, stood up and gave him a standing ovation. It was quite a powerful moment for myself and my wife, completely unexpected, that all the kids stood up, the whole class, 100, whatever, 95 kids, whatever it was, stood up and gave him a standing ovation. I don't think he necessarily appreciated or recognized what it was. But for us, it was a tremendous moment that people, you know, and again, it wasn't done, I think, because it felt it was a chesed project or something, just because they felt, you know, this is something special, that this boy had accomplished something. So that was very, you know, very important for us as well. I'll just mention in closing, and then we'll take questions, you know, like the stories you mentioned with Dr. Goldsmith, with your son, with davening. So also, somebody, the Chazon Ish already has written, people may be familiar, the Chazon Ish felt that people who have certain disabilities have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we don't fully understand. And over the years, my wife and I have definitely experienced that with Yosef. He is very into Kiddush Levana. I remember this goes back a few years. First of all, he's in general into the calendar. And that's part of it. So he knows when is Rosh Chodesh. So first of all, he always, always wears a white shirt on Rosh Chodesh. I didn't ask him to wear a white shirt. He had to wear a white shirt. And it's something he always, Rosh Chodesh, he dresses up on Rosh Chodesh. So we're not sure where that necessarily came from. We're certainly not sure because we went to a parent-teachers conference, you know, when he was in high school. I asked him, did you teach him, what did you teach him? I wasn't sure. What do you teach him at Kiddush Levana for? So the teacher said, oh, I thought you taught him about it. So I know, we have Kiddush Levana in the shul, obviously. But I guess it's tomorrow night, he's got to get Kiddush Levana. But somehow he's excited about Kiddush Levana. So he gives out the little cards for Kiddush Levana. And he believes, because we say David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim as part of the Kiddush Levana ceremony, that this is a simon, and that's our tradition. I'm being honest in saying I don't know where he got it from. But he's convinced that this is a simon that Mashiach is coming. And at the end of Kiddush Levana, after we have the little dancing and then Kiddush Levana, and he looks around, so to speak, and Mashiach hasn't come, he says to me, we'll try again next month. You know, it's a certain emuna pshuta. I don't know. We say an imam b'chol yom shiyova. I mean, he means it. It seems to me. You know, again, and I don't know where he got it from. So that's a big thing. Rosh Chodesh and Kiddush Levana. I mentioned before about the tefillin. You know, you mentioned with the Band-Aid. You know, last year, I believe it was last Sukkot. So you know, we work hard like everybody else to build the sukkah. I happen not to be terribly handy. You know, so it's a taka tumult to build the sukkah. To put up decoration, he also is very helpful. He's outside, schlepping tables, everything you have to do for sukkahs. And we came into the sukkah, and the maestro, last sukkahs, we came to the sukkah fire, I don't know how it was, where everybody else was, but just mamish, as we're bringing in the plates and everything into the sukkah, it started to drizzle. And Yosef looks up and he says, hey! like, are you kidding? You know? It's good. Now, you're going to make it rain now? Really? And stop raining. Now, I'm not so foolish everybody else to believe that he made it stop raining. It was just like such. Remember that? It was just like such a moment. Like, are you serious? It's going to rain now after all this? No, you know that's not happening. You feel when it rains on Sukkot. The Gemara's description is such an apt description. It's like you bring a king a glass of water, he throws it in your face. It's exactly what you feel like. But he had no. You want to know part of that? I mean, it was just very, 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 very remarkable. Last summer we went to Eretz Yisrael. By mitzvah of the family, Yosef was with us. He goes, my wife's mother, Lesham, is buried at Har Menuchos, so we went to Har Menuchos. So he's been there a couple of times, whatever. It's a very fascinating. I mentioned he has a good memory. He goes and he talks to her at the Kevin. He remembers his Bobby. She died when he was not old, but you know, he has an active memory of her. And basically, he tells her every major family event that happened since the last time he was at the Kevin. He reviews what this one got married, that one had a baby, and this one here. Right, he goes through everything, and he's literally like you're having a conversation. My wife and I analyzed it this time after we left Har Menucha. She said, well, of course. How did, of course she's there in his mind, because why else are we going? Why else are we going to the Kever if she's not there? Right? Not certainly not just to see a stone. We're going because she's there. So if she's there, she can hear me. She can't answer me, but she can hear me. So he has a conversation at the Kever. He's also very into going to the coastal and putting notes in. So he mentioned when he came back just now from Eretz Yisrael, it was in the program that Yachad runs called Yad B'Yad. So he came back from Eretz Yisrael. So he told me he was at the coastal a few times, and he put his note in, and he talked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he said, I asked Hashem to help me. He lists off all the things that he does that he sometimes shouldn't do. I asked Hashem not to eat. He's on a special diet. I shall help me not to eat the things I'm not supposed to eat, and I shouldn't talk to myself, and I shouldn't run around. I asked Hashem to help me all these things. And then he said, at the end, I said, I'll see you at Tashlich. Because by Tashlich, he goes again, he talks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he throws all the things. He said goodbye to HaKadosh, leaving the coast, and I'll see you again at Tashlich. So he has a certain spiritual connection, which we find, as you mentioned, your child, many of these children have. We can learn from everybody. As I've tried to demonstrate, there's a chiyuv and mitzvahs, at least on some level, that all the poskim talk about that are worthwhile bearing in mind. And most important, that everybody belongs, as I said before, I don't want to misrepresent. I'm all in favor of Chesed Project and the work that the counselors, whether it's in Shalva or it's in Yachad or whatever those do, is wonderful. But you get the impression, I think, and I don't know Shalva firsthand, you get the impression these kids are not just doing, like you said, just to accrue the chesed hours that they have to report back, you know, to school. They're doing it because they mean it. And these children, and hopefully as adults, become their friends and people that they care about and people they associate with and so on. And that's the way it should be. We've come a long way. We've come a long way in the, you know, in the community, in the Orthodox community. Years ago, people were embarrassed to even admit that they had a child with any kind of disability, whether physical or emotional or intellectual, whatever else. We understand it today, and we work on inclusion. And these are some of the pointers regarding educating these children, because they deserve chinuch as well. Thank you very much for listening.